step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. It's Uncle Silk.
This your boy, 35, All-American.
And Dan.
Big weekend. Daniel, how you feeling, baby?
I'm feeling, as the kids say, Gucci.
Feeling Gucci?
I'm feeling Gucci.
Man, you don't say that before, Dan.
That was a hell of a weekend, boys, huh?
Sometimes you got to put your big boy drawers on and go out there and, you know what I'm saying, do what you got to do.
That's right. You know, I was surprised by the Sunday afternoon announcement. Wasn't as surprised about the announcement today on Monday. But, I mean, talk about locking down DBU for another 3 or 4 years, huh?
Yes, sir. Secondary is locked and sealed. Beautiful things going on, man. Before we get into the recruiting talk, we'll get into that bag in a little bit. How y'all boys' weekend was in past week?
My weekend was great.
It was my daughter's little birthday weekend. Her birthday was on the 4th, so we went down to Kissimmee, celebrated a little bit in a timeshare, whatnot, man. And nice. Got a cracking down there. And, hey, Silk, by the way, we was in that lazy river. It's no lazy river like the one we went at Aquatica.
Oh, no, that was the one, bro.
No. Bro, I was expecting the Aquatica Lazy River, bro, and I got in there and was upset, bro, because I almost had to swim around the Lazy River. Whereas at Aquatica, man, that thing was pushing us around.
Yeah, it was Florida. Check this out. Go to Volcano Bay. They have two of them. So they got the Wild Lazy River and then the regular Lazy River. That wild one, dog. My wife almost lost her in there.
I feel like that's where I belong, in the Wild Lazy River.
No, listen, bro.
But you got to be about your wits, Dan. You got to be about your wits.
Bro, I had a high standard.
I'm always about my wits. I'm always about my wits.
And now my wife got on this water slide, bro. And we have been begging her to get on for like 2 days, me and my daughter. Man, she finally got on, bro. And she was like, yeah, that's it. Like, she made every excuse in the world not to get on again. And I'm like, just come on one more time. She's like, nah.
You're talking about the water slide, right?
Yeah, the water. She won't get on that water slide no more, bro.
That water slide is not for everybody.
Yeah.
Vibes on the water slide was crazy.
That's good. It was a relaxing weekend. A lot of work catching up on that. Was not out on the boat this weekend, boys. But other than that, it's kind of a relaxing weekend. Got a busy couple weekends potentially coming up and just trying to relax a bit. So not much, man. I mean, just kind of hung out, to be honest with you. Just kind of relaxed.
That ain't bad, man. The closer you get to football season, you kind of get in that mode, man, of staying home on weekends. So
keeping my batteries charged up a little bit. Since football season and all is going to happen now, I want to make sure that I'm rocking and raring to go. But, man, it was a hell of a Sunday. I got some trolls off. It's been a while since I've been able to have some time on the internet like that.
Likewise.
You know what? It's always good. You know, Will Muschamp said it when Florida beat Tennessee, how great it was to look out and see all the disappointed faces out there and how much you loved it. I feel the same way about Miami. There's just something about Miami fans and Tennessee fans. And we'll talk a little bit about the AP poll, the coaches poll that came out. But, man, I was able to get some good trolls off this weekend and last week. I'm pretty proud of myself since last show, boys.
Yeah, I give myself about an 8. I've had better days, but I had a pretty productive day. I made a lot of people mad. For the most part, I can't complain at all. I had a good week past week. Spent a lot of time at our Orlando studio, the Big 3 Roll-Up studio that we have in Orlando, just getting that prepared. And it's pretty no leisure time. I'm all business until that place is put together, man. So that's just going to be my update every week, you know?
I love it. I love it. Well, I definitely want to head over there sometime soon. So let me know the next time you're coming up, and I'll try to get over there and try to check it out, because, you know, I'm looking forward to watching many a football game there.
Absolutely.
I'll even bring over a bottle of a Buffalo Trace. I was able to get to the store a couple weeks ago, was able to buy them out of a bottles kind of behind the counter, one limit per customer. They gave me four. So we'll bequeath a bottle to the Kush house, you know?
Okay, Dan.
Don't bring the Buffaloes.
No, just the Buffalo Trace. Yeah, Who was it was Annie. Annie was recently in Wyoming.
That's wild, bro.
Yeah. Shout out to Annie. Big Wyoming vibes.
But did somebody post some Buffaloes up by like Gainesville last year or something?
I don't know, but if there are, then I got to go find them so I can post them.
Somewhere in North Florida, I believe. I don't know.
Oh, are you thinking of the picture that I posted earlier today of the mountains near Lake City?
No, not that, bro. What are you talking about? Nah, somebody said like this. I seen like an early morning foggy picture. It was like some buffaloes or something. I was like, I did not know there were buffaloes in Florida like that.
I think it's just the white buffalo, which is a bar in Gainesville.
Oh, a beautiful place.
A beautiful place.
Beautiful place.
All right. Vibes in there, bro.
Yeah, there's big vibes at the White Buffalo.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's beautiful vibes.
Big, beautiful vibes. All right, boys, let's get into the show. A lot of stuff to talk about. We got a big show. Former Gator coming on the show. We got Steve Wolf on coming on the show, too. As always, this show is handled by the Thomas Firm, or sponsored by the Thomas Firm, which is going to handle all of your insurance claims for property damage to your home or business. Their lawyers have over 20 years of experience handling roof damage and leaks from storms, water damage, hail damage, hurricanes, sinkholes, and fires. They're going to do work all over the state of Florida, and no claim is too big or too small. So if you suspect that you have damage to your home, give the Thomas Firm a call for a free consultation to ensure that your insurance company pays what you are owed for the complete repair of your home. There's no charge unless they recover what you're owed from the insurance company. Give them a call at 813-221-2525. That's TNTattorneys.com, 813-221-2525, and that's the Thomas Firm. All right, boys, let's get into the Gator news, and we'll get into some recruiting news. Gators, number 8 in the USA Today coaches poll. The top 10 goes in this order: Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Oklahoma, Penn State, Florida, Oregon, and Notre Dame. What do you guys think of the 8 spot?
I'm fine there. Only person that's ahead of us that's a little disrespectful is Penn State. Okay. That's it. Yeah. But everybody else, I can see what they going at with that. That's cool.
Yeah, I'm good at 8, Dan.
Yeah. Good spot to be at.
I'm good with the number 8. I don't necessarily love some of the teams that are ahead. I think LSU's replacing a lot. I understand they're the defending national champions, and I know that they've recruited well, but they're installing a new quarterback, new running back, you know, a lot of new pieces. They still do have some dynamic weapons like Jamar Chase. I do think 5 might be a little high. Don't necessarily know if I'd put the Gators in front of them or not. But yeah, Penn State seems a little high at 7. I think that Florida, in my opinion, should have been in that 6 or 7 spot, but I can't argue that any team that's ahead of Florida besides Penn State should not be ahead of Florida. But of the Florida teams, you have Florida at number 8, and then you have UCF at number 21. Miami and Florida State were not ranked. As well as Tennessee, also one of Florida's big rivals, unranked this season as well. So Gators come in at number 8.
I like us at number 8. You know, there's not a lot of pressure at number 8. If we was anything higher, of course, I'm going to shoot braggadocious tweets about being anywhere in the top 5 and all that. But 8 is a good spot to kind of just vibe on the outside of the top 5, win, stay around the area, and just win games, man. You know, stay low key.
We hover around this 8, 7, 6 spot. You know, and win games. You know, win the SEC. So, we got a lot of strength in our schedule, and the games hold weight. So, man, we hover around this, man. We can creep into that 4 spot. Top 4.
Absolutely, Florida does play, excluding a potential SEC championship game against Alabama, would play the number 4 team, Georgia, the number 5 team, LSU. They also play the number 13 team, and we're going to talk about the new schedule here in a second, Texas A&M. They also play – that's it. So those are their top – they have four teams in the top 25 that are listed there right now. Tennessee's just outside of the top 25. Kentucky's not far outside of the top 25 either. So a pretty rough, pretty tough schedule for the Gators as always. But again, the Gators sit number 8, and you know the chances that if they, you know, do well, there's no reason that they can't continue to climb those rankings. So shout out to them. With that being said, the SEC did announce last week the addition of two additional games for the Florida Gators. They will be traveling to College Station to play Texas A&M and in Arkansas, and Felipe Franks are going to come to Gainesville. So they have moved. I think we announced this at the last show that they've moved to a 10-team only SEC schedule for the year. Florida's going to play their traditional schedule that they were already going to play, which includes playing Ole Miss, and they are adding Texas A&M and Arkansas to that list. Any thoughts, boys?
I ain't gonna lie. I was kind of laughing at the tweets that was getting up about Felipe coming into the swamp and going pig. So I was there for the vibes a little bit. I got a few laughs out of that, but it's gonna be dope, man, to have him back in the stadium and see what he can do. You know, see if he was chopped up to play in the SEC, because I mean it was kind of rough here for him.
So. Franks is my guy. I hate it had to be him, bro. Yeah. I really do. But this pass rush, the defense allowed Swamp. Yeah, I don't expect a good game out of Franks that game.
Yeah.
He'll probably get some good numbers because they're going to be playing from behind a lot this season. So he'll get some production just from them losing all the time. But, yeah, I don't – they just going to be playing catch-up, man. Every other game, I'm rooting for Franks. This one, yeah, I hope it's a 40-burger.
Yeah, I don't think Arkansas is going to be very good this year. Arkansas is, traditionally, they beat Florida a few years ago. We played them in the SEC championship a bit before that. You know, Florida's always played Arkansas decently well. But, I'm curious to see how Franks does at Arkansas. I was kind of surprised with the pick. I mean, I'm not sure what his options, completely were. But with Arkansas installing a new coach, didn't recruit well, doesn't have not chock really full of talent, and obviously play in a very, very tough SEC West. I don't see Felipe Franks and that Arkansas team really mustering a great year ahead of themselves. I wish the best Felipe Franks, and I think that he'll show that he could be a potential NFL quarterback. But, man, I think that they're in for a rough ride there in Fayetteville. I don't know their whole schedule, but man, their schedule looks tough. I see them maybe as like a 1-9, a 2-8 team over there in Arkansas.
Yeah, I saw their schedule, man. It's pretty rough for them boys over there. So,
but I did see that Sam Pittman, the head coach of Arkansas, tweeted that he wants to play this season. And if the head coach of Arkansas wants to play football this season, then we shouldn't be one to stop him.
We got to keep it going, man. I think these kids are safer playing football than out in the streets, being monitored and tested and all that stuff. I don't see a reason why they couldn't go play. Like some things just not making sense. I understand there's some like health risk and whatnot, but I mean this whole game is health risk.
Yeah, this is a.
I just think that they really want to just just make sure they cover their ass if something happened, bro, because they're gonna be held liable.
Yeah,
so I think it's just, that's what I
think it is. I mean, they're liable when somebody get paralyzed.
Yeah,
that's true.
There's a lot of things that I don't think are being completely talked about. I don't think either side of the equation is really handling it well. I don't think that there's a large contingent of sports writers and people trying to keep sports from being played. On the same token, I do think that there, needs to be some deeper discussions about the issues that we do have at hand. And I don't know if this is completely just a COVID-related issue. There's obviously a lot of issues with liability. There's a lot of issues with how our students are treated differently on student, campuses where, they might be forced to be there while normal students aren't. At the end of the day, I think what we're saying is a complete shifting of the tide. And I think it's a lot happening to college and university administrators. And I'm not saying that this is a conspiracy theory that they're trying to stop, sports from, potentially, growing into more in terms of, you know, what is their responsibility to potentially pay them? And, you know, is the jig up now that they're not just student athletes? So I think that there's a lot to consider here. I think if it is a COVID related issue and a COVID related issue only, then I don't understand. You know, these students are in a better position on university campuses with access to better food, to better medical professionals. You know, and if they're following the same standards that, you know, your conference set forth and you are set forth by your medical personnel and medical directors, then they should be able to play. But the chances of them potentially going back, and, you know, Rick Wells tweeted about going back to Jacksonville, and Jacob Copeland tweeted about going back home, and, you know, what kind of risk are these students being put themselves in, you know, if they're not playing football, right? And, you know, you take the students, you know, on campus outside of that circumstance, and you think about those, you know, most of these kids don't necessarily come from the greatest, you know, facilities when it comes to healthcare, or the homes when it comes to healthcare or food or access to certain things, that these kids are probably a lot more safer in Gainesville and in some of these cities. But you guys know that a lot of this has to do with legal issues, and, you know, there might be some deeper issues too. So I'm curious to see how this all plays out over the next couple of days, because there's definitely schools that don't want, you know, games canceled and then sports canceled. And it seems like there is a large,
I think they're avoiding a conversation about, like, compensation,
right?
I think the NCAA or the colleges or presidents care more about that than, I'm not buying the health stuff. They haven't right. really cared that much about these kids' health ever.
They've never cared about health.
Yeah, no, so all of a sudden they care. No,
yeah, no. It is a lot deeper than that, and I think that you bring up a great point, and I'm going to say it here, not that he listens, but you know, I think that Mark Emmert and the NCAA have done an absolutely atrocious job. You know, he's a interesting and weird dude, and he probably won't come back on the show. But Brooks McAllor came onto the show, you know, 8 months ago, 9 months ago, and talked about the NCAA and not really having any power or control over what their member bodies or member institutions are doing. And I think that we're seeing that the NCAA really has no teeth, no ability to do anything, because the fact that you have all of these different conferences with all these different standards and protocols and what that they're doing, and the NCAA has done nothing over the last 8 months or last 6 months to say to put, you know, a position for athletics to be played this season is baffling. The fact that they've, you know, shown their face and they're not doing anything about it. And, you know, if sports gets canceled, you know, for another season or another even half of a season, you're going to have colleges going bankrupt. You're definitely, or, you know, potentially in serious financial disarray. You're going to have athletic departments going bankrupt. And more importantly than that, you're going to have a lot of cities that are going to really, really struggle. A lot of these college towns, and a lot of it, in my opinion, has to do with the fact of a lack of direction from the NCAA and the governing body of college football and college sports. That's my soapbox. Yeah,
most definitely. You know, I mean, like we talked about, like Starksville, Oxford, Mississippi, you know, even Gainesville, man, these little towns rely on these people coming in and staying at these hotels and buying food at the restaurants. And, you know, so it's going to be interesting, man. And, you know, they mess around and sit it out again for another spring as well, man. That's, you know, that's too. Like
they got to make an attempt. They can't, like, yeah. You don't know when, we can't predict the future with this virus. So what if if it's here to stay, yeah, then what? Then football's over. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. you got to kind of move and function, and then we'll learn the new norm. Like, we got to go through this and go through the experience. It's gonna be some failed stuff. It's gonna be some good stuff, but they can't just shut it down. You know, they got to attempt and try. They're gonna be guessing all next year. Like, they're
not gonna know what to do. Sense, of course. Sorry to interrupt. It makes no sense to go this far and work this hard to give up before trying anything.
Right.
Yeah. We're not seeing huge spikes in cases on college campuses from, you know, the student athletes or anybody else that are in these, you know, protected kind of environments. So I don't know what happened between all of these conferences announcing their schedules last week and all of a sudden on Sunday or Monday, you know, the world completely falling apart and saying, oh, we're going to have to cancel football for the year.
Right.
I mean, this don't make sense to me.
It doesn't. There's got to be more. But all right, boys. Well, we're gonna watch that. We're gonna pay attention to that. You know, we're all praying and hoping that that football happens. But we got some big recruiting news. This segment is sponsored by our friends over at Roof Soldier. A big shout out to Roof Soldier, who's staying on as a sponsor. Really excited for them, and they're really appreciative of the support that you guys have shown them. So Roof Soldier is a veteran-owned company that specializes in all aspects of residential and commercial roof replacement and repair. So whether you've experienced any recent roof leaks or damage, or simply want to take advantage of having a free roof inspection as we head into the summer months of what we expect to be a very active hurricane season, contact Roof Soldier today to schedule an inspection. Roof Soldier handles all roofs all over the state of Florida, and no roof repair or replacement is too big or too small. So give them a call at 1-877-ROOFS-FL or go to their website, roofsoldier.com. Again, that's Roof Soldier, 1-877-ROOFS-FL. All right, boys, big news, big, big news. On Sunday afternoon, probably around 5 o'clock or so, 6'2", 180-pound cornerback from Miami Palmetto High School, Jason Marshall, shocked everybody, shocked all the experts, shocked Steve Wilfong, who we're going to have on a little bit later, had a 91.7 crystal ball rating to commit to the University of Miami, spurns a couple of his teammates, including Leonard Taylor, and decides to announce for the Florida Gators. That's a big get, boys.
Big boy get in the secondary, man. Some five-star action, a big need. This kid can do it all, man. They may drop him a little bit in the rankings because, you know, that's how they do when we get commits. But at the end of the day, this kid's going to be a five-star when they do the final rankings in the top 38 kids are five-stars. He's going to be in that bunch. Elite kid, man. Real special. We just going to sit and vibe. Leonard Taylor, we right here. We ain't going nowhere. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, I should have said that. 247 has him ranked as the 29th overall player, the number 2 cornerback in the country, and the number 7 player in Florida, according to their composite rankings. Ahmad, were you able to check out anything on Jason Marshall?
Yeah, I definitely checked him out, man. Great ball skills. And that's what we talk about when, absolutely, you know, we talk about great DBs, man. It's how well you can get to the ball and make plays at the ball. You know, the old stigma was, you know, DBs are wide receivers that can't catch. Well, that should change. You know, we here. Mm-hmm. And we the real DBU. I don't know what everybody else talk about. You know, people putting up they the DBU and they put up NFL stats. I don't know how that go. But, you know, we here to stay, man. We, we reloading. So I'm excited to see what the future has ahead of us.
Absolutely. So,
and I don't even like to say we beat Miami on that one because it came down. I think we beat Alabama. That's a bigger flex. Like, beating Manny, we supposed to beat him. Whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think them beating Bama for a guy that was high on Bama's board, man, that's impressive, man. Shout out to Larry English and everybody involved in the whole situation.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, they recruited him. Recruited really well. I think a lot of people have written him off. I think the only reason, a lot of people thought he was going to go there to Miami. There was some trending that he was going to go to Miami simply because Breshard Smith, Leonard Taylor, and there was just some discussion. You know, the Miami Palmetto guys might be all headed down to Miami. But Jason Marshall, by no stretch of the imagination, was a very, very, very high target for University of Alabama and really for any country or any team in the country. Jason Marshall is going to be about as physical and my opinion of a quarterback that you're going to get. Lanky, really like what his body can build into. Like you said, Ahmad has great ball skills, has great, you know, I think closing speed, but, you know, plays elite talent and plays elite against elite talent, right? So those are the kind of players that you want. And those are your program changing type of guys, right? You know, we've talked about it on this podcast. We've talked about it, you know, off the show is, you know, Florida needs to land those elite prospects that all of the big guys are going after, right? You need to win head to head against Alabama, Georgia, LSU, you know, your in-state rivals. And to get a guy like Jason Marshall, you know, he's one of those guys that other people want to play with as well. So that's right. A huge get for, like you said, for Larry English, for the support staff and the hard work that they did to get his and secure his commitment when a lot of people had written him off down in Miami. So a big shout out to him. So Jason Marshall, 5-star, has committed to the Florida Gators on Sunday. On Monday at about 3 o'clock, it was supposed to be 1:30, then 2 o'clock, and then 3 o'clock. 4-star, 6'2", 170-pound safety, also from Miami Palmetto, Corey Collier, announced that he was going to be committing to the University of Florida. Florida beat out a number of schools, including LSU, for his commitment. He is a legacy of Florida State University. And so to see Florida secure a commitment from the number three overall ranked safety, according to that 247 composite, I think Rivals has him ranked the number one safety and a five-star in there on their ranking. So, but big shout out to Corey Collier, the second of the Miami Palmetto guys that are committing to Florida. Guys have any thoughts there?
Well, shout out to Corey Collier. I don't think he has the ball skills like I would say, or the physical skills that kind of just threw me off a little bit. He'll have you cool. But he's a good get. Big kid. We need to say, like I said, safety is a huge need. Dad played at Florida State, great genetics. Out of the five that's at Palmetto, I think we got the two that can flip the other two. I like our two guys. They didn't go with the momentum and jump on that whole wave. I like for Miami to have a shitty season and us poach those other guys back over to the good side.
Yeah, one of the
I was definitely thinking the same thing. You know, two guys that we got. It's easy. You with these guys every day, you know, and we don't know what's going on when these guys are at school or, you know, at practice or, you know, whatever the case may be, and what they talk about through text and their group messages and whatnot. So you know, from experience, because we had seven guys come from Lakeland when we came. You know, we always talked about, you know, what is it going to be like to be on the same team again. You know what I'm saying? And it's kind of hard to just, you know, have success and whatnot, and then not want to play with each other and have it all come to an end right now. So it's going to be interesting, man. Especially like Silk Saving, when Miami have a shitty season, these guys will want to flip.
Absolutely, I just love the way that this DB room is starting to continue to grow.
It's passing by some people.
Yeah.
And the train gonna pass some people still. I'm telling you, boy.
Yeah.
You
know, I love what we see there. You know, starting with, you know, the guys that are going to be sophomores, you know, this year, you know, you have Kyer Elam, who I think is going to be potentially a, you know, an All-American. You know, you have Jaden Hill, Chester Kimbrough. You know, guys that are starting to, you know, mold and move into their career. Then
these two dudes are big dudes. These are Bama LSU defensive backs. Like these ain't no small defensive backs. These are big dudes, man.
Absolutely.
From a physical standpoint, we got some impressive guys, man.
Absolutely. Then you add in Jahari Rogers, who I think, you know, once he has a little bit of time. I mean, I think that he's probably one of your most athletic players that Florida's had in a long time in that defensive backfield. That's not taken away from any of the guys there, but I think that he's that Joe Hayden type, right? He was a quarterback at his high school, but just, I mean, when he played at the I think it was the Under Armour game or the Army All-American game, I mean, he just showed you what he could potentially be. And, you know, a guy like Torin Gray coaching him up for a year or two, I think that he's going to be great. You know, Ethan Pounce, he's a 6'1" guy. You know, Rashard Torrance is a 6-foot, 195-pound big hitter. You know, he's coming in. You know, don't forget about our boy Trevez Johnson, who I think is just going to have a dynamic career at Florida. Then you add in some of these guys. Now, all of a sudden, your DB room that was strong is even stronger, right? You have Jason Marshall. You have Corey Collier already committed. You have Kamar Wilcoxon, who's coming in, you know, who announced that he's going to be coming in here in the this season in August, right? So you have Donovan McMillan, who I think is a big hitter. You have Jordan Young, who we've talked about, we think is a really solid player, and I know Florida had ranked highly. And then Dakota Mitchell, right? You have a lot of these players that are really coming in. They're big, they're strong, they're, you know, they still have frames that you can grow into. I mean, you're talking about a DBU room that, I mean, you're talking about some real solid potential there, Ahmad.
Yeah, I mean, the names that you just listed, it almost gave me flashbacks to some of the great secondaries that we had in the past. And I know that those guys that you just named could definitely be, you know, the same level, if not greater than you know, the guys in the past that's been great, man. It's just, you know, you got to just trust the process and know that, like we always say, if you come to the University of Florida, you have an opportunity to make an NFL roster or possibly contend to be on an NFL roster. You know, now we're not saying you're going to play for 10 years, mm-hmm. but we're going to have an opportunity, you know, and you know, that's what we keep striving to continue that legacy. And I think we're doing a great job at it.
Absolutely. All right, boys, we are
real quick update. Right now we have the number two class on Rivals mm-hmm. and the number six composite class on 247 Sports. So before you guys fire any more of the staff, man, just let it all play out. Just vibe. I think we're in a good position. I said this like a month ago. I still feel the same way. We're in a good position. The games get played. It's going to get even sweeter.
Absolutely. I don't know if you guys saw that ESPN came out with their FPI rankings today, and they had Miami as a four and six team again this season. So I'm here for all of that.
Yeah, you just got to let it play out, baby.
All right, boys. We're going to get into some recruiting talk a little bit later when we get Steve Wilfong on the show. But before we do that, let's get to a former Gator great, his position on the line. Let's chop it up about his time at UF and looking forward to it. So let's get Shane Edge on the horn.
Let's go. Hey.
Shane Edge's interview is brought to us by our friends over at Lee Friedland of the law firm of Friedland & Associates. He's going to handle all your auto accidents, medical malpractice, nursing home cases, criminal matters, and personal injury cases in every jurisdiction within the state of Florida. Give Lee a call at 1-800-95-INJURED and yourfightourbattle.com. Again, that's Lee Friedland at 1-800-95-INJURED and yourfightourbattle.com. Again, auto accidents, medical malpractice, nursing home cases, criminal matters, and personal injury cases. Give Lee Friedland a call. Let's get Shane on the line.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
And joining us for the first time on Stadium and Gale is a four-time honorable mention All-American, a two-time All-SEC, our second-team All-SEC player, and three-time SEC champion, punter Shane Edge. Shane, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So, Shane, excited to have you on. Wanted to talk, as we talk about with all the former players that we've had on the show, how did you ultimately end up at the University of Florida?
I was at Columbia High School right up the road. Coach Spurrier and Florida was really not very good at punting. And I wasn't necessarily a punter coming out of high school. I played quarterback and free safety. And I punted and kicked, but that's because nobody else could do it. But I knew that there was no chance for me to go to the NFL playing quarterback or free safety or whatever. So, and like I said, Florida was absolutely terrible. I can remember them playing Auburn down in Gainesville in 90. And on the north end zone was still being built. And I could see the screen over there. It said 25-yarder after Arden Krzyzewski punted the ball. I said, if I can't punt there, I don't need to go anywhere else.
I love it, man. So you ended up committing to the University of Florida early on in Steve Spurrier's career. As a guy that didn't necessarily love to punt the football and was part of that fun and gun offense, what was it like being a punter in the heydays of the Florida Gators offense?
Well, I had a lot of fun watching ball games. Yeah. I did hold, so we had a lot of chance to go out there and kick some extra points and field goals. But yeah, real quick story. When I was being recruited by Coach Spurrier, Jamie Spironis was a recruiting coordinator at the time. And we went up to Jan's office and we're waiting to go to speak to Coach. And it's taken a while. And Jamie kind of peeks his head in there and says, "Hey, Coach, we got Shane Edge here, the punter from Columbia." And he said, "We don't need to punt much. Why are you here?" So, and it's true. We didn't punt a lot. So we it was a lot of fun with Coach Spurrier because I think he's one of the best coach offensive minds in the world. So we had a lot of 70-point games at the time, and we didn't lose very much, which is always a good time.
I love it, man. So I love it. So talk to us a little bit about your experience. Obviously, you were there, as we talked about, during the heyday of, kind of Florida's, I guess rebirth of, Steve Spurrier's offense, and you were there for three SEC championships and really the start of Florida dominating. What was it? What did you notice, during your 4 years as Florida continued to rise to prominence and, get a lot more attention, certainly than, when you initially committed there, back in the early 90s, and, how perception might have changed in those 4 years?
Yeah, just the confidence Coach Spurrier instilled in all the players. Everybody knew once they walked on the field that we had a chance to win the ball game, and generally we did. But what really turned us around as far as a team is when we got Rich Tootin, the strength coach. He made everybody accountable. Everybody knew when I stepped on the field, I went through the same workout did the exact same thing that they did. So they had the confidence in me as I did them that we put the work in, we know what it takes to win championships, and that's what we did. And we had the coaches to do it also. I mean, all the coaches were really good. You know, the offensive line coach, defensive line coach, Coach Red, Coach Strong was there at the time. We just had so many good quality coaches, and with Coach Spurrier leading us in the right direction, that's what it was. And like I said, the strength coach was key because he put everybody in a situation where they're going to get stronger. A lot like what Savage is doing now. You know, people don't understand that. When you have a coach like Savage getting everybody ready to play and having everybody get stronger and quicker and faster, that's what it takes. And if you can, as an athlete, when you come in, if you get bigger, stronger each year, you're going to have a chance to win ball games. And that's what they did. And with an offensive mind like Coach Spurrier, it didn't matter. We were going to win most of the games anyway, but that strength and that conditioning and all that got us through to win the championships.
What was it like pressure-wise? Is it the same pressure as like a field goal kicker? Do you get the same type of treatment from the players if you shank a punt? Like, what was that like in the locker room?
No, Silk, I didn't shank too many punts now. Come on now. but it wasn't too bad because, you know, when I first started, Arden was the kicker. So he did very good. But my first year I came in and I did fairly well. I was all SEC the first year and they kind of got that confidence in me. So they knew that I was going to go out and do a pretty good job. Now, when Judd Davis started kicking, we went through a little stretch with Bart Edmiston, who was the number one kicker in the country. He didn't do such a great job, so that gave Judd the opportunity to come in and play. So when he came in and played, we both did very well. Judd was the Lou Groza Award in 93, best kicker in the country. And I like to think I get better as the years goes on. So I would think that Judd and I was one of the better kicking and punter combinations in the country. So, we always kidded each other. Whether we had a bad game or if we had a great game, we always had fun and stayed loose. I think that's why we were as good as we were because, you know, we just went out, had fun, did our job. And at the end of the day, if you do that, everybody's going to have confidence in you.
Where are kickers at in the hierarchy in the female department around campus?
Well, no, I don't know about kickers because kickers are sissies. Now, you know, punters are athletes.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't mean to call you a kicker.
It's a difference, right?
Oh, it's a huge difference. Punters are athletes. Kickers are sissies. But I would tell you they're in the upper echelon. How about that?
Okay. I like it. So what's your favorite game in the Swamp?
Favorite game in the Swamp? I actually have two. We played Florida State in 91. We won 14-9. That was the loudest I've ever heard it. It was one of the best games that we've had. That's when Brad Culpepper, Tony McCoy, all those guys, they lit Casey Weldon up. They beat him. And, of course, Eric Rhett had a great game. Shane had a great game. But that was one of my favorite games. And then when we played Tennessee that same year in 91, we beat them that was a good game. The reason I like that game is because I averaged 54 yards a punt on four punts. So that was a pretty good game.
Okay.
But my favorite game. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Continue.
I was going to say my favorite game ever is the 93 championship game, SEC championship game. We're in Alabama. Middle of third quarter. It's 4th and 13. And, there was a little bit of a high snap, and I took off around the corner and fake punt, ran for 22, 23 yards, got hit, got laid out. I mean, old boy hit me pretty good, but I didn't feel anything. I was so jacked up, and I was laid on the ground. I'm looking at him on me, and I told him, I said, we're about to kick y'all's ass. And the very next play, Terry Dean hit Jack Jackson for a 50-yard touchdown, and we won the game.
Let's go.
Okay. It's funny you say that, Shane. I played for Urban, and I kid you not, I swear, we started practice with punt team, and, you know, every single practice, we practiced a fake punt. And he said, we don't know when we're going to use it, and we don't need it until we need it. And we're running all year and then use it in the SEC championship. So my next question to you was, how many fake punts did you get to run?
I ran actually. There was one that was called, and that was in 1993 against Florida State. And all week in practice, I had thrown the ball to Dale Spear. He was one of the defensive backs at the time, but he was on punt team. Of course, we played special teams. Starters played special teams, but all week in practice and throwing it to Dale. There's no question it's going to be a first down, may even be a touchdown. For some idiotic reason, some dumbass reason, I fake punt. I threw it to the other guy on the right side when Dale, of course, was wide open. But fortunately, it was pass interference. We got the first down anyway. But yeah, that I ran that, and then the one in the SEC championship game was not called. Coach Spurrier told me after the game. He said, I went to the media guy, and they kept asking me, was that called? Was that called? He told them, yeah, I called it. Made me look smarter. But
it was your call?
Yeah, it was my call. Earlier in the game, guy was close to blocking the punt, and I said to myself, if it's close, I'm going to tuck it and run. And it wasn't too bad, but it was high and right, and I took off around the corner and got the first down. Hell, I wanted to score. I was trying to score a touchdown. I cut back in the middle. That's when I got lit up. But I did that against them, and then LSU in the swamp, I ran first down. So I was 2 for 3.
Yeah, I didn't know what the flexibility of that, because I know Dan Mullen gave our punter this past season that kind of that same option. Like if he see it, he can go.
Yeah.
And I think
and
we
nearly gave Silk an aneurysm.
Yeah. Definitely.
I wish I'd have had the wherewithal I wish that coach would have told us, hey, do it whenever you want to do it, because I would have done it every game.
when we played, we had something called Rocket. All right, and it's basically like the rugby style kick,
right?
All right, yeah. So Chaz had the opportunity to either kick it or run it, and Rocket was the kick it, and then Rocket option was the kick it or run it. What we call Rocket against Hawaii on 4th and 17 in 2008, and freaking Chaz ran it and got 18 yards.
I'm telling you,
Yeah, he got 18 yards, and Urban was like, boy, oh, boy. Like, it was early in the game, too, Dan. It was like the beginning of the game, bro.
And that's when Hawaii was coming off their, like, 11-1 or 12-0 season, man. They were trying to help out that,
Now, that kind of bit us in the butt early last season, correct?
It sure did, yeah.
Well, actually, the first one we converted, right?
Against Miami, yeah.
Yeah, the first one against Miami we did, and then a couple games later, Townsend made an interesting choice on our side of the field.
Yeah.
That's kind of questionable. What game was that?
I forgot what game that was.
I forgot what game it was, but it was early. But I was worrying about that. I was thinking, what the heck is he doing? I knew it wasn't called, but if he had the option of taking it himself, that's great.
talk about a little bit because I played on punt block as well as punt team at UF, and I played a little bit in the league as well, but talk about how devastating it is when a punt team punt block team blocks a punt.
It's terrible. I only had one in my career. It sucks.
It's awful, right?
Oh, it's terrible. But that's the biggest game changer aside from a kickoff return or punt return for a touchdown, something like that.
Right,
but
right.
When you do that, hell, you're usually punting on your side of the field anyway. So field position is key. So we was actually technically the SEC championship winning game against Kentucky my freshman year. We were back on the probably 10-yard line, and guy came through. He was untouched. I guess they missed an assignment. Blocked the punt, and I'm just thinking, you've got to be freaking kidding me. And that they actually went on a little bit of run, I think scored 10 points, and we ended up pulling away at the end. But that's the worst feeling in the world. You get a punt blocked, you don't know where it's at, you don't know where the ball is going. Yeah. It sucks.
Yep.
But like I said, it's one of the biggest game changers you can have.
Yeah, Urban, whenever anything got close, Urban was just – he would freak out.
Oh yeah,
it's no way it's no way anyone should get close to our punter. How he thought.
Well, and there's different protections, and I don't like that spread punt stuff. Did you guys do that? Have the spread punt where the guys were 3 yards apart from one another?
Yep.
That was weird to me.
Yeah, I don't understand
that. So we did that, and we practiced something called Well, we always stepped off the inside foot. So whether, you know, the ball's on the inside, it's going to be left, right, or the ball's, you know, on the inside, on the right side, is going to be right, left. So we always protect the inside because that's obviously the closest angle to the ball is a straightaway angle. So we always took care of the inside step, and then we went from there. We you know, got out of there really pretty quickly. So we used that a lot, especially when a team was good at rushing, we spread them out because if you don't come out with us, then we're gonna fake it.
Okay, yeah. I guess it's good in that aspect, but like I said, it was always weird to me because, you know, just the punt protection part of it, I just, you know, it was beyond me. I'm a little bit older, so I didn't quite understand the whole point of it. So. But yeah, I see y'all got the play up.
Yeah, so I just found it. Well, Spencer just found it. So I know for those of you that aren't watching, we'll tweet it tomorrow with the show. Shane, I want to watch this with you just because I just watched it and I noticed that there's – I don't want to call it hesitation, but I kind of want to know what's going through your head during this during the whole play. So it's a punt against Alabama, a 93 SEC championship. You go and then you start to run. Did you know from the beginning that you were going to fake it, or was it – something that you, once you caught the ball, you're like, okay, I need to.
Yeah, no, like I said, and we had a, you know, a great snapper. Harold Monk was, you know, a great snapper. So when he snapped the ball and it was a little bit off to my right, and like I said, something earlier in the game, a guy came up and almost blocked it from the middle. So I told myself, if it's close, if any kind of thing's out of whack, if it's not perfect, I'm going to go ahead and take off and run. And when I did, you can see I kind of do a little jab step and go out to the right. Mm-hmm. And then I'm coming up the sideline. Now, once I get to the sidelines, that's when I cut it back and got lit up. And you'll see me at the very end of it. Like I said, when I was pointing at the guy, tell them we're going to whip their ass. It's pretty neat.
I'm getting up out of there, though. I see you, Shane.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So
you might be faster than a mod, bro.
Yeah, that's right.
I was pretty quick back in the day.
Yeah, Ma would have got there, though. You know that. So,
don't discount yourself, Shane. You probably were. So, all right. So, rewinding, you and you go, and you have a pretty open field. You know, make a blocker, but then you turn inside, right? You could have very easily picked the first down up, but you're just like, I'm just going to keep going. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, like I said, I'm trying to score. I don't.
There you go. I like that mindset.
So then you break a tackle. You break a jersey pull, and then you get, you know, surrounded by a bunch of folks. And I get speared to the ground.
Yeah, if you'll see right there at the end, I'm pointing at him, telling him, "Hey, y'all done."
I love it, man. I love it. So Shane, after a successful, very successful career at the University of Florida, you make it. I see what you did there. All right. So you you make it to the NFL and you have a bit of a career in the NFL. But we'll talk to I guess you played for, I guess, five different teams, and you played over in NFL Europe for a bit. But talk to us a little bit about your experience in the NFL and what that was like.
Well, you know, it didn't take me a long time to realize NFL meant not for long. Okay. Sam Weiss was the coach of the Tampa Bay Bucks when I was coming out of college, and he calls, and I was trying to make a decision on whether to go there, Kansas City or Arizona. I did not get drafted. So Tampa Bay was giving me a bigger signing bonus, and it was closer to home. And when the head coach is telling you, hey, we got an older guy punting, we're not sure how good he's going to be. Don't know how long it's going to last. We're going to put you on the practice squad and, you know, see how it goes. Well, you know, all that sounded really good at the time. You know, that's guaranteed money if they put me on the practice squad because they had a guy named Reggie Roby who's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame. He was pretty good. So, but he taught me a lot that year. Obviously, I got cut, and then I went to Spain, had a really good time over there, great experience. And then when I went to Pittsburgh actually allocated me to go to Spain. So I went to Pittsburgh and got cut from there. But their punter got hurt. A guy named Josh Miller got hurt. He had a hernia surgery. So I went up for about 6 weeks to Pittsburgh. Had a great time. Really enjoyed it. And then I tried, you know, here and there, New Orleans, Kansas City. And my last year was San Francisco. You know, I got cut in San Francisco. My son was born that year, actually, at that time. And then Once I got cut, I figured it's time for me to get a real job and take care of the family. So
I love it. So Shane, I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about your time in Pittsburgh and,
I'm interested in Barcelona.
Yeah. No, well, hold on. I mean, I think you'll like this story. So, if I remember correctly, I saw the clip and it looks like it was, I don't know if it was a bad snap or what, but it looks like you're just about to run out of the end zone for a safety on a putt. You're punting out of your own end zone. You're about to run out of bounds and then a player from the Houston Oilers, I guess shoulders you. And then you and him, I guess you start to give him the business. So talk to us a little bit about what happened there.
Well, we, you know, Coach Coward told us, you know, hey, we're going to take a safety. We don't want to get the punt blocked, just like Ahmad and I were talking about earlier. You don't want to get a punt block and change momentum. So, you know, I got the ball. The snap was fine, but I was trying to waste time. Well, I did. And if you'll notice in the clip, I kind of fumble the ball, or the ball moves a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm saying to myself in this split second, I'm saying, if you fumble, you're not getting on the plane or you're not even in the locker room. You're going to be cut before you get, you know, get out of the game. So that's what I'm thinking about. And then when Chris Dishman is the guy that pushes me out of bounds, now he pushes me about 10 yards out of bounds. And then another guy comes up behind me. No reason for him to be there. You know, I get nudged a little bit and I turn around and see who it is. And he gets a right cross to the face. So that starts a brawl, and at that time it was the most fine game in the NFL, because I don't know if you'll remember this or not, but Mike Tomczak, there's a clip on NFL films where he gets drugged by his face mask. You know, regardless, the commentary on that video is the best part. Whenever we're done, you need to listen to it. It's very good. I enjoy it thoroughly. But the guys in Pittsburgh loved me. Okay. Yeah, they said, if we got a punter that's going to fight, we love him. Yeah. I got a standing ovation as I was leaving the field. But I also got a Chris Berman nickname. That night, Chris Berman was doing the highlights, of course. He said, "And Shane, don't push me over the edge back to punt." So.
I love it. I'll be honest. I had heard that story from years ago, but I kind of forgot about it until I was prepping for the show the other day. And I don't know, but that's definitely you became my favorite punter after watching you throw the was that a right cross or so?
Yeah, got a couple of right crosses to the solar plexus, old boy says. But I think I'm still the only punter in the history of the NFL that's been thrown out of a ball game.
I was going to ask. The list couldn't be long. Shane, I have a quick question, or you want to talk to you. I mean, obviously, it seems like you're back in Lake City now, and your son actually plays for the University of Florida baseball team. Talk to us about what that experience is like to have a legacy University of Florida athlete in the family.
Well, it's very special. I mean, you know, he's worked his butt off. He went to Columbia High, played baseball there. Now, he loved soccer. He was all-state in soccer and baseball. You know, but he tore his ACL his senior year of baseball, so he really wasn't highly recruited to go anywhere. So Coach Wiggs at Santa Fe gave him an opportunity to play there. He did really well his freshman year. I think he hit 410, 10 home runs. And after that, you know, Florida started taking notice of him and Coach Sully, and they would come out and watch, and they offered him a scholarship. So once he completed his second year, sophomore year at Santa Fe, he's now at Florida, and he always grew up. Obviously, he didn't have a chance to like anybody else, because if he did, I'd probably kill him. But he was a Gator from day one. So, but it's really neat watching him play in orange and blue, and we played the last season at the MAC, and they were 16-1 before the season ended, so they were very good. And his first at bat as a Gator, he got a hit. So hopefully this year in the new stadium, he'll get a lot more opportunity to play, and I know he's working hard. So, but you couldn't ask for him much more. You know, we're definitely proud of him. So hopefully he'll get to play a lot.
That's awesome. Well, Shane, we absolutely appreciate you coming on the show this evening and chopping it up about your experience at the University of Florida. I know that you're a fan favorite and a personal favorite of mine. So thank you so much. Are you up to much now? Do you do much? I know you do the Twitter thing, but you do much on social media, or where are you at these days?
Yeah, just the Twitter. I love, you know, getting on Twitter and aggravating. I'm glad you brought that up because I had a question to ask Ahmad. Kind of aggravated me a little bit, and I wanted to chime in a lot with he and Dan, piece of trash. Danny Cannell. What's old boy's name?
I'm not the piece of trash.
No. Yeah, what's old boy's name? I don't really know what his
name is. Danny Cannell.
Danny Cannell.
That's kind of a jab. I knew who he was, but I kind of liked the way you kept going back and forth with him.
Yeah, he wanted to talk about his pro career, but, you know, I had to let people know that it's so easy to be a backup quarterback in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
You got to read cards and throw it to the dude in that circle. Well, actually,
he probably threw more interceptions than anybody, you know, because he got to throw it to the first team defense, right?
Yeah, I looked at his stats; they went pretty good. He just had some longevity. Hey,
how did they do against us anyway? I don't remember.
I think he was on the choke of dope, wasn't he, or something like that?
No, yeah, don't say that. That was the worst loss I ever had.
Yeah,
I was on that team.
That's his fame and glory, though.
It didn't have anything to do with him.
No, he said bench. Yeah,
it was Rock Preston and those guys. And of course, we kind of gave it to him too. I actually thought I'd won that game. There was another matter of fact. If you have a chance to go look at that game, I put Peter Boulware on his butt that game. There was a high snap, and I was going to roll out, and I went ahead and punted it anyway. Boulware was coming at me. And, you know, I guess he didn't want to hit me for fear of getting a penalty or whatever. So I lowered my head, put him on his ass. And then the umpire got in between us or whatever. They actually had a hit out on me because we played them again that year, if you recall, in the Sugar Bowl. Clifton Abraham and Tiger McMillan, they played on that team, and they were with me at Tampa. And they told me that Bobby Bowden had a steak dinner for anybody that could knock me out of the ball game in the Sugar Bowl. Of course, that didn't happen either. Oh, yeah, that didn't happen. Yeah. And Boulware actually tried, but again, for some unknown reason, he stopped instead of hitting me because the whistle blew. So I leaned my head into him, hit him again. So
I've never met a punter that was more hated.
Oh, yeah, I loved it. Listen, I'm telling you, those punters are athletes. They're mean.
I'll take your word for it, my friend. Shane, it was an absolute pleasure getting you on the show. Definitely want to do it again. And congratulations to you and your family and your son. And we'll root for him. And thanks so much for coming on this evening.
Thanks a lot, Shane.
I appreciate it. Go
get it. Thanks a lot, man.
Hey, we got a good recruiting day today.
Big day. Yeah. Big day, Shane. Yeah. Big day.
Make
got
sure
some,
you
got
talk
some
about
killers.
That. That's right.
Yo, yes, absolutely. Sir. We already about to get more into it with Wilt Fong in a second.
All right, y'all have a good day.
Yes, sir. All right, take care.
Shane Edge.
Yes, sir. Cool, man. That's a cool, cool cat, man.
Mm-hmm.
Cool cat. Cool, man. I like to see, I don't know, I got to check his, did he go to the combine? I got to see his 40 numbers because he was scatting a little bit on that fake.
Yeah, I don't think he went to the combine, but
he bent the corner a little bit though.
Yeah, he bent it on two wheels.
Depended on it, you know.
He was on two wheels, but he got around there. Then he tried to cut back field. Like, where do you think he going? Now you getting Spody.
You didn't say Spody though. My daddy used to say that when I was a kid, bro.
Yeah, my dad too, bro.
Yeah, you trying to be Spody. You threw me back just then, boy. Yeah, but boy did try to get Spody and bend the corner right quick and just cut back. Like he do that every week or something. Like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, he ain't going to get too many opportunities to do that, so he tried to get to the chicken box quick.
And our next guest is brought to you by Brunt Insurance and Financial Services. Anything you need insured from the panhandle to the keys, hit my man Greg up, 954-589-2204. Auto, home, life insurance, financial services, anything you need. My man Greg got you. Great customer service. I'm a Brunt Insurance customer. Everybody else on the Big Three Roll-Up is a customer. Great dude, great business, big coverage, baby. We out here a little bit. Let's hang out with Wilt. We'll
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
And the first time on Stadium and Gale, we got the crystal ball go himself from 247 Sports, Wilt Phone. What's up, man? What's going on with you? How's it going?
No, I'm here. What's up, fellas? Oh, thanks for having me on.
There you go.
There you go, man. What's your mentions been like today, man?
Say what?
What have your Twitter mentions been like today? Into your...
Hey, I deserve it. I deserve it. I'm not batting 1,000 anymore in the Florida market, and I deserve the heat.
So what do you think changed, man? You had my man Marshall Cristobal to Miami. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Not only did I have him Cristobal to Miami, but if it wasn't Miami, I had him going to Bama.
Very good.
So what do you think happened? Did you think you got misinformation, or did Florida up there to press him and kind of jump into the last minute? What do you think happened? What are you hearing happen?
So I think my information was good on Miami in the moment. I think that Miami was the one last weekend. I think that Florida was able to rally from last weekend to what I think was Thursday. And he committed to Florida on Thursday, is what I was told. And then obviously announced it on Sunday night. And Florida was the program that led for much of the recruitment. But down the stretch, I was told that Miami, when he picked Miami, that Alabama was the other program. And I do think he also was talking to Alabama from between when we thought he was going to Miami and when he announced for Florida. But, I mean, in a nutshell, he ended up choosing the school that, you know, was perceived to be the leader the longest.
Steve, did you feel like, you know, Florida or Miami's chances might have better solidified when Leonard Taylor committed, or did that not factor in to your decision or your thoughts?
So I'm just speculating, but I think that he liked Miami, and for whatever reason, last weekend Miami was the one. Mm-hmm. But y'all know, y'all have been following recruiting for a long time. Sometimes these things are fluid, and they can change. And he may have said, "Hey, I thought I wanted to go to Miami for a second, but my heart's been with Florida the whole time." Yeah, I don't know. And I think that I don't know if everybody around him was feeling Miami either. And so I think when they all got on the same page, you know, Florida was one that everybody was cool with.
I love it.
And the great relationship with the Florida staff. They've been there with them a long time. And then I was told that he also looks up to CJ Henderson, and those two clicked. And Florida's also a tremendous opportunity for him to come in the SEC and make an early impact, because, I mean, y'all are running out Marco Wilson and Kyir Elam this year. You know, if Marco has a great year, you know, Marco may not be back next year. And so then all of a sudden, Jason's got a chance to compete for a role, you know, opposite of Kyir. But either way, you're playing more than two corners regardless. And I know Florida's recruited some other guys that have some ability, you know, guys that I liked coming out. But none of them are as talented as Jason Marshall. And so Jason Marshall is an instant impact type player at a position where it's not, you know, that's one of the easier positions to make an early impact if you're super talented.
How does this affect maybe perception of Dan Mullen's, you know, recruiting or Florida as a whole recruiting? I know a lot of people have talked about, you know, maybe Dan Mullen not being the best recruiter, or their staff maybe not being chock full of recruiters, but, you know, Florida sits number six in the country right now with their recruiting class, and then landing a five-star like Jason Marshall. Do you think that this changes perception at all, or is there still some worry?
Well, you broke up a little bit, but I'll say that it changes my whole perception of Florida in a way, because Florida struggled to close these blue chippers. Y'all know that. Like, if you look at last year's class, the top players in the class, Gervin Dexter they won that one on an evaluation. They had him, they offered him early and got him committed before everyone knew he was a five-star, except for probably Florida. I think they had him in camp. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they had him, they offered him and committed him early. They did have to hold off Georgia late, but they were playing from far ahead. And then Derek Wingo is another super talented player in the class last year that was ranked high. But that also wasn't like your true blue chip battle in the sense that he was committed to Penn State. I mean, Florida should be able to flip a kid they want from Florida that's committed to Penn State. No disrespect to Penn State, right? Mm-hmm. And then Xavier Henderson, that wasn't a layup recruitment because the young man loved Clemson and he was and Georgia did a good job, but they had the family tie there. Mm-hmm. What was fresh on my mind was all the other recruiting battles that they lost and all the kids that they tried to flip in their state that they couldn't flip. And they even lose a talented receiver to West Virginia, even though it was a class that ranked high, it still left some on the table to be like, man, they could have, you know, done better than what they did. And to your point, like Dan Mullen's obviously one of the best coaches in college football. He maximizes his roster and gets every ounce out of it every year. And y'all are trending up with the two New Year's Six wins and now hopefully knocking on the door of the college football playoff with some of these young men that y'all recruited. But for them to go out and get Jason Marshall in what was certainly a heated recruiting battle and for them to close it and win it in the fashion that they want it, now I can look at like an Xavier Sory, who they're recruiting against Georgia and Alabama, or Terry and Arnold, who they're recruiting against a lot of the same schools, and say, all right, I was skeptical Florida could win these before, but now seeing them win one with Jason Marshall, you feel better about their chances for the other kids.
What's your overall opinion on my man Collier, Corey Collier, the defensive back that we got committed today?
Man, does anyone have a bigger need at a position in this recruiting class than Florida at safety? Right. Y'all didn't land one in 2019, which is kind of wild. I like Rashad Torrance in last year's class, but you know, obviously you see Sean Davis, Brad Stewart, and Donovan Steiner. Those are three SEC impact guys. But after that, it's slim pickings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to go out and get Corey Collier alongside my man Donovan McMillan, who we love at 24/7 Sports, and then you got some hybrid guy. I wouldn't be surprised if Kamar Wilcox eventually played safety and brings cover ability to the safety position. Dakota Mitchell's kind of that swing, that nickel safety type. And then hopefully if you're Florida, you close it with a guy like Terry Arnold, who I think is elite. I think Terry Arnold should be higher than what we have him ranked. But Corey Collier, the thing that excites me the most about Corey Collier, he's obviously a good high school football player. He's around the ball a lot, breaks passes up, turns the ball over. He's not afraid to come down and fill an alley. Has good instincts. He'll need to, you know, work on his speed, but I think it'll come because he's what excites me most, where I was trying to get to, is he's 6'2", he's 170 pounds is what we had him listed at. He's got a lot of upside physically, and as he gets more powerful, he's going to get faster, and he's already making plays and showing, you know, a fearless style of play. That I think there's some upside there, and I'm excited. And then you put him next to a guy like Donovan McMillan, who I think will be among Florida's leading tacklers several seasons in a row once he gets on the field. That's a pretty good duo. And then, like I said, you go out and try and get a guy like Terry Arnold to close it out, who has all first-team All-SEC written all over him wherever he chooses to go.
Speaking of Arnold, what's your vibe on him? Decision time frame, and like which schools are trending for him?
So I have an old pick on Bama. I don't feel as good about it talking to Tarion recently. I do think Florida and Georgia are programs in there. I know he's always liked Jimbo Fisher. They have a relationship from when Coach Fisher lived in Florida, and Tarion knows Coach Fisher's son. I don't know exactly where A&M fits in there, but obviously they're swinging hard. I think those are some of the schools that quickly come to mind, you know, but everybody's trying to take a swing from what I can tell. If you're a big time program in the SEC, Terry and Arnold's a top target for you. But I think Florida's in the middle of that one right now. And I think that him and Sori want to play together. I'm not going to call them a package deal because maybe they are. I just don't know it yet. But I do know that those two are buds, and I could see them playing together in college.
Mm.
Steve, talk to us about Florida's class a little bit more. Who are some of the people that you really like in Florida's class outside of obviously Collier and Marshall?
Yeah, so I think my favorite player in the class is Justice Boone, you know, out of Sumter, South Carolina. He's a guy that started his high school career standing up, and as he's gotten bigger, he moved down to the point of attack, and I just think he has a high ceiling, and I really think that when he gets to Florida, he's going to be a difference maker on the defensive line. I think Nick Elksness is a really good pickup at tight end. I don't know if y'all remember, but I was a huge Kyle Pitts fan. When y'all signed him, and he's obviously been terrific. I think Nick Elksness is going to be a guy that's going to be able to come in and make an impact when Kyle Pitts' time is done. So those are two guys that, you know, really stand out to me that maybe aren't super touted that I think are going to end up being really good for y'all. Obviously, Marcus Burke's a stud. At wide out, and then we you guys know where we have Donovan McMillan ranked compared to our peers. That's one where I don't have to defend and fight the good fight on Swamp 247.
and do you foresee any people that Florida fans are going to need to potentially look out for on the recruiting trail that potentially might be recruited from this class, maybe, you know, another school or any flip alerts that we might need to keep an eye out for?
You're asking me if there's anyone in Florida's class that could get poached?
Yeah, that's, yep.
Are you asking me if I think there's anyone committed to Florida that could be flipped elsewhere?
Yes, sir.
Y'all there?
Yeah.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, so perfect.
Are you wearing an old school Larry Johnson jersey?
I had some Muggsy Bogues, man.
I said Larry Johnson earlier. I thought it was Larry Johnson too before he got up.
Okay.
Yeah, Muggsy Bogues, man. So Dan asked if we had anybody that would possibly get flipped from on our commit list.
So I think that there's no one that's like obvious to me that I could see flipping on y'all. I think that you guys will have some attrition in your class, but I don't think it'll be anything that like would be a panic.
Yeah, kind of trimming the fat a little bit. How solid do you think my man Leonard Taylor is to Miami?
You know, I mean, obviously, I think that right now, you know, I couldn't call if he's going to flip now or anything.
Right.
Recruiting in South Florida, especially, can get fluid sometimes. But I think that he feels about his decision to play at Miami, which is super close to home, where you know he said it several times when he committed how important it was to play close to mom, and so I don't know. Maybe something will change down the road, but I'm not. No one's told me that he's on flip watch yet.
But so, definitely not yet. I just seen how solid he was. I wouldn't expect that. That'll be like a signing day move. I don't see him flipping anytime before then, but we'll see if football games get played, visits get taken. Got a little ways to go.
Go ahead.
I was about to close it. You got more?
Nope, you're good.
Will Fong, man, I appreciate you for coming and hanging out with us. Will Fong.
Man, thanks, guys. I really appreciate y'all. And I deserve the smoke on Jason Marshall. I appreciate y'all being good to me. Thanks for having me on, and have a good one, and hope to talk to y'all soon.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Sorry we messed up your percentage, bro.
Hey, man, nah, those are the fun ones. You know, obviously I want to get them all right, but those are the fun stories to cover. You know, I don't like missing too often, but it's, you know, those surprises are good, you know, for the industry and for the fan bases. And that was cool. And, you know, I went to the Florida board right away and ate my crow. You know, it was a good night on the Florida side at 24/7 Sports for sure. And obviously on social media and with all y'all. But thanks again and catch y'all later.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Yeah.
Steve Wilfong, the crystal ball god, man. Cool cat.
A lowercase g god now, you know.
He's got to earn up. Don't do it all like that, Dan.
Man. No, I, you know, he stood in the paint a bit, but, yeah, it's funny to kind of chop it up with him, but I mean, recruiting is 100% fluid, right? You know, what happens today could change tomorrow, could change the next day.
All the excitement is done, right?
Yeah.
It's done. Not like I said before, whatever they sow all summer.
Yeah.
That's they got to hold it. You know what
they
I'm
gotta,
saying?
They got to go. They got to.
Hey.
Game's got to be played, hustle.
The game's got to get played. I hope you can still sell that same dream.
What's funny, there's some Miami fans that, like, don't want games to be played.
Because
know that their class is going to only go down from here. Their pinnacle was, like, August, 8th. Right. I mean, they were dead set that they were going to go 5 for 5 or 6 for 6, whatever it is, on the Palmetto guys, that Jason Marshall is going to commit, that Corey Collier was going to commit. I mean, they were completely sold. And imagine August 8th being the pinnacle. We've been there. Right.
I personally think that they needed more than those two. Like, I think if they got one of the two we just got, like us splitting it like this. I think they give us a chance when they lose. If they had gotten all five, we wouldn't get none of them, no matter on the season. I think they would all bonded and stick together. But now there's two on the other side. When Florida's doing good and Miami's sneaking up the place, yo, man, y'all boys need to come over here.
And they go to the go be in the locker room talking about, man, y'all boy trash. Y'all going to play for that?
I'm telling you,
bro, how it's going to be. So
just vibe out. We got a long way to go.
That's a good show, though, boys.
Yo, that was a dope interview with Wilfong, man. Got to hang out with the crystal ball guy for a little bit.
Absolutely.
Before we get out of here, I got to remind the people, manscaped.com, shave those balls, man. The Lawnmower 2.0, smooth. You know what I like about the Lawnmower 2.0?
Tell me.
Motherfuckers got a guard on it, like a one guard.
Okay.
I would like a two guard on it, to be honest with you. Like, I don't know which one that's a one guard they have on it, but if they could give me a two, because I don't want to be like baby.
Yeah, I got baby. You.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I just want to buzz. Yeah, fade it a little bit.
I was just going to say, I want a 1, 2, 3, and 4 so I can have a fade, you know?
Yeah.
Trim up the edge and everything, you know?
You got more guard? I only got one guard. I need more guards, but shout out to the Lawnmower 3.0, not 2.0. And this weekend, I shot out a IG and a tweet, and everybody was hitting me up. Man, you serious about the ball deodorant? Yes, man. The ball deodorant slaps. You don't think you need ball deodorant until you try ball deodorant.
That's right. And the spritzer, too.
The spritzer's cooling. It's summertime, man. Keep them boys fresh down there, bro. You know? So shout out to manscaped.com. Use coupon code SG at checkout for 20% off and free shipping. Support the podcast.
That's right. And speaking of supporting the podcast, we appreciate all you guys that signed up on Patreon. I think we had 4 or 5 new people join over the last couple of days. So big shout out to you guys. Also shout out to our store, our shop. So stadiummcgale.com/shop. We added a bunch of new merchandise that's on there. If you like any of the designs and you want it on a different article of clothing, maybe you want it on a hoodie, maybe you want it on a hat, maybe you want it on a
G-string,
yoga pants, whatever you want, tank top, whatever it might be, just reach out, slide into our DMs. We can modify that and get that over to you as well.
Do not slide in my DMs about no G-strings.
Slide in. That's at Uncle Silk with a K. And then if he doesn't respond, I'll give you his phone number and you can call him and send him the pictures that you want.
And what's the lawyer supposed to
do? Oh, man. All right, Ahmad, I think that you got the song of the week to take us out.
Yeah, man. We're gonna go pop star featuring Drake.
Who's the artist?
DJ Khaled. DJ Khaled.
Oh, very good. All right, boys.
Hey, man. Same corner, same time.
Let's ride.
Yeah.
Bitches. We the best music. Another one. Yeah. DJ Khaled.
Bitches calling my phone like I'm locked up nonstop. From the plane to the fucking helicopter, yeah. Cops pulling up like I'm giving drugs, nah. I'm a pop star, not a doctor. Bitches calling my phone like I'm locked up nonstop. From the plane to the fucking helicopter, yeah. Cops pulling up like I'm giving drugs, nah. I'm a pop star, not a doctor. Hey, shorty with the long text, I don't talk, ayy. Shorty with the long legs, she don't walk. Yeah, last year I kept it on the tuck, ayy. 2020, I came to fuck it up, yeah. I want a long life, a legendary one. I want a quick death and an easy one. I want a pretty girl and an honest one. I want this drink and another one, yeah. And I'm troublesome, yeah. I'm a pop star, but this shit ain't bubblegum, yeah. You would probably think my manager is Scooter Braun, yeah. But my manager with 20 hoes and Budokan, yeah. Hey, look, Ariana, Selena, my visa. It can take as many charges as it needs to, my girl. That shit platinum just like all of my releases, my girl. Niggas come for me, I tear them all to pieces, my girl. I'ma show your sexy ass what relief is, my girl. Please don't take no shit that's about to have you geeking. And I'm not driving nothing that I gotta stick the keys in. Wonder how I got this way, I swear I got the bitches calling my phone like I'm locked up nonstop. From the plane to the fucking helicopter, yeah. Cops pulling up like I'm giving drugs, nah. I'm a pop star, not a doctor. Bitches calling my phone like I'm locked up nonstop. From the plane to the fucking helicopter, yeah. Cops pulling up like I'm giving drugs, nah. I'm a pop star, not a doctor.
I'm a pop star, not a doctor. Watch her, says she rep a whole different block, so I blocked her. Busy at the crib, cooking salmon with the lobster. If we talking joints, it's just me and David Foster. Bodyguards don't look like Kevin Costner, you tweaking. Just pulled up to Whitney, Houston, Texas for the evening. They tell the same story so much they start to believe it. The ones that start like Drizzy shit was cool, but we even. Man, how the fuck? 2, 4, 6, 8 watches factory so they appreciate. Crown in my hand and I'm really playing keep away. Shit don't even usually get this big without a Bieber face. Nah, piece of cake, nah, Turks and cake, yeah. Go and get your friends, we can sneak away, yeah. I keep a, like I keep the faith. Wonder how I got this way, swear I got the
bitches calling my phone like I'm locked up nonstop. From the plane to the fucking helicopter, yeah. Cops pulling up like I'm giving drugs, nah. I'm a pop star, not a doctor. Bitches calling my phone like I'm locked up nonstop. From the plane to the fucking helicopter, yeah. Cops pulling up like I'm giving drugs, nah. I'm a pop star, not a doctor.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.